right. You are listening to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. For those of you tuning in for the first time, The Real World is UBC Film Society's radio segment where we talk about all things film related. And today, on a very special episode, it's our fun drive episode.
Woo! Woo!
Make it even more fun, we got a guest!
What?
Yeah, it's not a ghost in the studio, it's Matthew.
Maybe
back
I
for
am.
Round three. Yeah, all the time you're spending here, you gotta take up residence.
Now, of course, Well, I just think that, given the fact that I float around here actually ambiently every day, I figured I'd find my way in here again.
Oh, yeah.
Only a matter of time, truly.
We saw them ambiently floating around, we're like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Episode 3.
An apparition-esque
exactly.
style. You know how it is. But it's not Halloween, so.
No. So we figured, bring him on for an
It's off-season.
Yeah.
I don't have much work.
Employ Matthew to haunt your studio.
That's the dream. Employ Matthew. We can end it there.
Yeah. Exactly. But, as per usual, I'm Emma.
I'm Hannah.
Yeah. And
Ghost Matthew.
Ghost Matthew. Today, we're going to be talking about iconic dance sequences in film because the theme of our show, as I mentioned, it's Fun Drive. It's Discorder. It is a disco inferno. And today we're fundraising. We are fundraising for Discorder. You can go to donate2citr.ca if you feel like you want to support our current objectives, which are digitization of some old cool Discorder archives and also spreading the drop locations of Discorder further across Vancouver and beyond. Pretty cool. You can get more access to Discorder. Great magazine. If you haven't read it, highly recommend. And in terms of other plugs, UBC Film Society, tonight at The Norm, Harry Met Sally in collaboration with Project Sunstein. So show up. Or you can show up tomorrow for a collaboration with the GRSJUA, where we'll screen Daughters of the Dust, followed by Hyenas. Or you can also show up Friday for Watermelon Woman at 6, followed by Tongues Untied at 8, or you can show up for all of them. That'd be pretty cool.
Busy week.
Yeah, it's going crazy. And speaking of going crazy, I got some ads for you. So we're going to play those and then we'll be right back.
Devin Cole is a woman in total control. Unafraid and unashamed, Cole has burst onto the scene through her expertly crafted feminist pop anthems, packaging social truths into repeat-worthy bops. This is the era of fempop, and Devin Cole is an artist you don't want to miss. Join Devin Cole on her Two Shades Blonder tour and see her in Vancouver at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 16th. To find out more and get your tickets, visit admitone.com. That's admitone.com. I should be spinning, but
if you enjoy bluegrass and old-time music, please join up and become a member of the Bluegrass Music Association of Canada, the BMAC. With your membership, you'll receive a quarterly full-color Bluegrass Canada magazine, as well as have access to the Bluegrass Canada website. Your membership will also allow you to contribute to the nomination process of the Canadian Bluegrass Music Hall of Fame. Help BMAC promote bluegrass artists with up-to-date information, including band members, performance locations, and helpful advice for bands wishing to travel to the USA. And finally, it will allow you to access information for festivals and events across Canada, bluegrass radio listings, organization partnerships, and a resource library for all things bluegrass. To learn more, log on to bluegrasscanada.org or call Mike Higgins at membership at 905-567-4708.
Looking for an audioscape to put your mind at ease? Landscapes by Dune is a musical journey through sampling and field recording. From the busy streets of Toronto to BC's picturesque landscapes, the Belgian artist recorded an array of sounds during his travels across Canada. Landscapes will be released on Pop Guitari Records Bandcamp on December 8th and will be available on all streaming platforms on December 15th. For more information, check out at Dune as Dune on Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Every Friday at noon, CITR takes you on a journey through Thunderbird Radioland. A journey of sound and song, of words and music, of the now and then, of the right here and the far away. It's The Eclectic Lunch, every Friday at 12 noon on Thunderbird Radio, 101.9 FM in beautiful Vancouver.
All right. We're so back. We're getting started. We're getting rolling. We have a lot of movies to talk about today, so be prepared for some good times, yeah? I think we're going to probably kick it off with Matthew's pick, which was Spider-Man 3.
So now I want it known that when you came to me and said we're doing an episode about iconic dances, do you have any in mind? The only thing that came to mind was Spider-Man 3 and Tobey Maguire's dance scene.
Yeah.
And we were just discussing this earlier, and I think it's truly because there are plenty of iconic dances in many movies, but this is a dance that didn't need to happen.
Yeah.
And there's really no, like, it's tonally inconsistent.
Oh, yeah.
With everything else that happens. Like, it feels like they just wanted a dance scene. And said, when could he be cutting a jig?
Where can he boogie?
Where can he boogie down?
Yeah.
And down the street and harassing passerby is
That's
what we've discovered.
The dream. I remember, like...
Is that the dream?
I feel like
Do
it's
want
not.
That?
Yeah. Definitely not the dream for anyone in this scenario, especially not me.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, like, you in particular, don't think you would enjoy that.
No, I don't think so either. I remember the first time I watched this, I was really young when I watched, like, the first, like, Spider-Man, like, the three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had to, like, I was so mad. I'm like, Spider-Man would never do that. Spider-Man would never dance, like, stupid and, like, bully people on the street. This is terrible. Sam Raimi doesn't know what he's talking about. And I think I, like, turned it off. Like, I had to return to it, like, a week later to be, like, coaxed back to it.
Physically shaking. Yeah. With, like, rage.
God. Film bro from the beginning. They should have known I was going to go into this. I couldn't do it. I think that's what pushed me away from Marvel, truly.
Yeah.
Really? And that wasn't even Marvel.
Wasn't,
they didn't even do that.
They barely had, like, you know, like, Infinity War hadn't even happened yet, you know. We didn't even hit peak
years away from Infinity
I was gonna say,
War.
I don't think like most of it had happened yet by that point.
No. It was still in the individuals, but I know I saw the future in that.
I remember watching, like, parts of them as a kid and being so scared of Doc Ock.
Yeah.
So I don't have, like, a super deep attachment to these movies, but I remember watching it, like, recently. I went through, like, all the Spider-Man movies are. And I know it's just, like, so random.
Yeah.
But so fun. And it, like, doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't feel, like, it's obviously very silly.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay.
Yeah,
like, I'm not going to complain about this.
Yeah. I feel like that's kind of just like a Sam Raimi thing in general, though.
Mm.
Like, low-key, sorry, Sam Raimi, I am kind of a Sam Raimi, if not hater, like, definitely on the more negative side.
A detractor, one might say. Yeah.
Perfect. Because, like, I don't...
From the beginning.
Wow, like, from a young age.
Yeah. I knew where I stood, and it was against Sam Raimi.
Like, wow.
Obviously, like, no one liked Doctor Strange Into the Multiverse of Madness. That's not a hot take, being like, oh, I didn't like the bad movie. But, like, I don't know. I'm not, like, an Evil Dead fan either. Like, something about, like, his just, like...
I haven't seen it.
I would say don't.
Really? It's on my watch list, so...
Skip. Like, I feel like the people who like it really like it and are, like, diehard about it. But if you don't like it, it's like, yeah.
I just find that he's such, like, a... And I feel like... This isn't controversial to say he's corny.
Yeah.
It's just he's real corny.
Yeah.
And you either love that or you hate it. And, like, to, like, center it on that one scene again.
Yeah.
I'm just, like, the idea that, like, Spider-Man goes evil.
Yeah.
Spider-Man becomes mean and like, harasses women on the street. Like,
yeah.
I like that... That, like, the logical, like, addition to that is, and he's busting it down with
dancing.
No care at all. And it's
he's cool. And dancing in his black suit for
exactly.
some reason.
He's got
and his little emo hair.
His emo side part that, like, I don't even think was really necessarily that in at the time when that movie came out.
That was definitely, like, falling out of favor.
It's like Sam Raimi, like, saw that, like, that was... He just saw someone with that hairstyle and said, oh, a cool guy would look like this.
This is what a cool guy looks like.
No, and I mean, in a way, wasn't... And in a way, he was correct.
Yeah.
In a way that, you know what, did Tobey Maguire channel some scene energy almost in that.
Oh, yeah.
But I almost feel like he more appropriated scene
like,
in that way.
His ass would never survive Warped Tour. I'm sorry.
No,
like,
no, 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 no.
Get him out of the pit.
No.
Oh my God.
Evil Spider-Man would not be in the pit. Evil Spider-Man would be paying VIP and sitting.
Yeah.
Truly. Truly. He's not standing on the ground with everyone else.
No. He only dances when he's not supposed to.
Exactly.
True. And that's really what that scene illustrates to us, is that dance is the societal constraints we place on dance.
Yes.
And I'm going to start writing an essay now.
I was going to say, there's an undergraduate film conference coming up.
Oh my gosh.
I think it's time. I think you got a pitch.
My foray into the film undergrad.
Yeah.
In my last year of my degree, we hard pivot.
Exactly.
Of course.
We hard pivot because of Spider-Man 3.
Well, who else is going to do it if not you?
Yeah. True.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. And that's a beautiful sentiment.
Yeah. And that's Spider-Man 3. Mm-hmm. That's really what more is there to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like we've been getting in the groove of it. I feel like I want to keep the good times rolling.
Getting in the groove.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear a little bit. People get up and drive. I can only see like half of the title. I don't know off the top of my head.
People get up and drive your funky soul by James Brown.
That's the
one. Oh, beautiful.
James Brown. We're going to hear a little bit of that. So I just want you to picture Tobey Maguire full scene in your head.
Mm-hmm. Black suit, emo hair.
If you're walking around right now, maybe hit a little bit of that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Get a little bit of a jive going.
Yeah. In honor of Evil Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Here's People Get Up and Drive Your Funky Soul. Long name. And I hope you were getting up and driving your funky soul, because that's what you got to do. A song like that? Hell yeah. So that was Spider-Man 3, a banger of a movie and of a dance sequence.
Mm-hmm. Banger of a movie is a controversial take, but
personally,
it's a personal banger for me.
Yeah, that's fair.
At the very least, that scene is a banger.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it in so long. All I remember is that scene, so I actually can't speak to the banger quality of this, but... The scene, Yeah.
A banger.
Preserve that in the Library of Congress. Everything else, maybe it's okay if we lose it a little bit. But that scene, yeah, that needs to be like laser printed somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But on a more somber note, we're going to be talking about After Sun.
Yay! Which, I had to switch it up.
Yeah.
Make it a little depressing in
that
here.
180.
We got too happy.
Exactly.
Yeah. We can't let you off the hook that easy.
No more. Cinema's not about joy. Cinema is about feeling big emotions to David Bowie.
Yes. I think that's, like, hello, that goes without saying. I love this movie. The first time I saw it was at Film Sock last year. It was my first Film Sock screening.
Wow.
And I went with pretty much some people that I, like, just met in class. And I said, I was like, guys, I might be, like, a mess at the end of this, so please don't judge me. And I was bawling.
Yeah.
And I was bawling. But everyone was really nice about it. So that was good. Because everyone else was also bawling. But yeah, this scene. I know, Emma, you have not watched After Sun.
I have not watched After Sun.
You're going to have to carry this. Because I'm going off vibes alone. And I'm getting bawling. Maybe basketball, maybe sadness. Who's to say?
Exactly.
Go find out soon.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous movie.
Yeah.
You know, father-daughter relationship.
Ugh.
Who doesn't love that? So it's with Paul Mescal, for those of you who don't know. Love
maybe,
him.
Maybe I gotta watch this.
Yeah.
Gotta get it on this.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, the dance scene is really, really heartbreaking. It's to Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie.
Oh, my God.
And it is just, like, so devastating. So it's Sophie and Callum, daughter and father, and they're on like a vacation, a summer vacation, and they're I don't want to spoil anything for anybody in this room who hasn't seen it, but really devastating scene. They're dancing together, and there's some like memory flash forward kind of things happening. It's so
good.
I have to like heavy sigh because it's just so beautiful, and so especially with the song that they are dancing to, I feel like it really like strikes a chord because some of the lyrics like they really hit to the scenario. And oh my God, I remember just like as soon as the song started playing, like, and this was already like a couple years after the movie had come out, so I knew I was gonna be like devastated.
Oh,
I had seen like, you know, little bits and pieces of this specific scene, but I always would like scroll past them. I didn't want to spoil it. But seeing it in full and like with the context of the movie, hearing the beginning of the song, it's just like, oh my God, like it hits you all at once.
God.
It's so good.
I feel like
it's
there's
so good.
Also something to be said about like, I don't know what it is, like going on vacation, like with your dad in particular, where there's just this sort of like melancholy to it by the end of it. Like when you're looking back on it, you're like, damn, you are a person outside my dad.
Well, oh my God. No, this movie, again, like I knew it was going to impact me, but I didn't think I would like relate to it so much in the way that I did. And so this is kind of one of those scenes where it's like the culmination of all that.
Oh,
like all those emotions have been building up throughout the movie. It's just they're kind of telling you like you can like let it all out. They're giving you the space.
Mm-hmm. There's that all that baggage build up.
Yes.
All the baggage build up. No, I feel like you were saying, like the something about the father-daughter dynamic specifically is such a great, like, I feel like there is a lot of cinema representation of specifically that family dynamic. And I don't know what it is. You mentioned a melancholy, and I'm not sure what it is, but there is such an aura, to be sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the realization, or like encountering your parent, either parent, in the context of outside of the parental context is always a trip.
Oh, it's so strange. Like, especially, like, I find it happened, like, very suddenly, at least, like, in my family. It's like, oh, I went away to university, and I came back, and suddenly it was like, oh, my God, like, these are people. My parents are people outside of their roles as parents.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's nice. I don't know. It's nice to be able to, like, you know, you see the relationship sort of shift and change as you grow.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's kind of, like, it's scary, you know?
It is a little bit. Yeah. And I think part of that comes with, like, you then, like, in our case, right, going away from home for university. It's, like, almost as the same time that you become, like, a person outside of home, whatever that may be or mean to you. Like, you also see those people who are back home as people outside of you. you know, like, mm-hmm. oh, like they're still doing things every day, even when you're not there.
Mm-hmm. It's not like, I don't know if you see this picture, but it's like the low polygon apple. And it's like,
yeah.
when my girlfriend leaves and everything yeah. starts unrendering,
yes.
I feel like that's like, you almost have that expectation that it's like yeah. the people in your life when you leave the space, especially
they're just
family.
Like, pause.
Yeah, they pause the render distance.
Yeah,
they,
yeah,
they
exactly.
start they simplifying.
They get
pixelated. Yeah. Fade away like
yeah.
Minecraft.
Yeah,
my, the chunk despawns.
Oh yeah.
It's like, I'm going to come back and like they're still just like doing like the idle animation that they were before.
Stop.
My parent idle animation. Oh my god.
But then you watch After Sun, you're like, wait, that doesn't happen. Yeah. Like, oh my god.
Thoughts outside of mm-hmm. sit on couch and play Fortnite.
My dad sitting on couch and play Fortnite? That's crazy. Yeah. I didn't. My dad, it's a sit on couch, watch a movie a little too loud.
Oh.
A little too loud. And I just imagine that that's what he's up to when I don't
exactly.
see him.
Yeah. Probably. I'm not going to disagree with that.
Oh, yeah. For one thing about dads, they stay sitting on couches.
Oh, yeah.
Or
oh.
standing behind it and being like,
yeah.
oh, ooh. I'm not really paying attention.
Arms like. Crossed. Ooh, it's yep. the classic, yeah. like your mom's watching something, you walk in, you're yeah. like, oh, I'm actually kind of, there's yeah. some drama happening.
Wait, like, I'm kind of locked in.
Wait, Kyle said what?
Yeah.
Some like telenovela or something.
Oh,
and I'm like,
god.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
What is happening? He's her child, but they're also friends? How did this happen?
So much drama packed in like 15 seconds.
No, I don't know how we got to that.
This is getting
from,
confusing.
But, but no, truly. And mm-hmm. it sounds like the movie encapsulates that humanization
yeah.
very,
yeah.
very well.
It's definitely working its way up on my watch list.
Mm-hmm. And now,
this conversation.
Oh, I think you would really enjoy it. Like, yeah. Yeah. And obviously, I'm assuming you like the song on its own.
Oh, yeah.
But after this, after you see it, you are not able to listen to the song without picturing the scene and like feeling all the feelings.
Wow. Ugh. I think we got to hear it then.
Yeah.
I think,
well, let's bump it.
Like, I mean, everyone knows the song. This one, the title's short enough that I can read it in the little pop-up, and I know it. Like, come on. I know my music.
Give her some credit.
Yeah. This is Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie.
Which also, like...
yeah.
Iconic.
Crazy call. I would have lost my mind. Can you imagine being there when this dropped?
No. I can't.
Like,
there's no, like...
would have to, like, I don't know, write someone, like, a telegraph or something. That's pre-iPhone.
Telegraph?
All I know is TikTok, scroll, DM,
Fortnite on couch.
Exactly.
Girl, all I know is scroll on TikTok, send TikTok DM,
yeah.
Twitter,
God.
Tweet.
Yeah. There was no DM back when Queen only had scroll and messenger pigeons.
Song came out. Okay, what's the Spotify link?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a CD.
Digitization or whatever. God. But here it is, Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie.
Pressure, pushing down on me. Pressure. So slashed and torn.
Right, that was Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie. So, as you guys know, if you've been listening from the beginning of the episode, this is our Fun Drive special. So please, if you want to support Discorder, if you want to support CITR, go to donatetocitr.ca. We've got all sorts of cool swag, depending on how much you give. You can even get a live song dedication on air. That's
for Valentine's Day, right?
Yeah. Which is, you know, I can think of nothing better. Like, you know, you
that's
don't even
the
have to dedicate.
That's the dream. Exactly. Not the Spider-Man dance.
Oh.
No.
I'm glad we've moved past that one. That was a little concerning how we all really jumped on it. It was like, this is the dream. I was like, we're not supposed to be in this.
Yeah, I know.
We're supposed to think he's evil for this. The way he boogies down. The drip for the donations goes hard.
Crazy. Yeah.
Did it have me pondering the tier that gets you that the vinyl mat cover? Did have me pondering because that clean as hell.
Oh yeah. Unfortunately, my wallet was opening. I was looking at.
No, my card just like flew out, and then like
my information.
We would like totally understand if that happened with you guys. Yeah. Like, we wouldn't be upset if you just accidentally.
Yeah.
No, and like, I mean, like, I opened the page, and like, I have my credit card saved on my browser, so it just automatically filled it, and then just pressed donate, and
doesn't
it sound tempting?
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I mean, a little more incentive. You want to pick a song. That song can even be People Get Up.
Oh.
Drive.
You're a funky soul.
Keep forgetting it.
You went in for the bit, too.
I did.
Was confident.
God, I didn't have it pulled up.
That's tough.
Too confident. I fumbled. But yeah, it can be that song. And you can make
You could even dedicate it to yourself. Like,
Okay, self-love for Valentine's.
Yes.
Okay,
so
yeah.
But yeah, you can find all this and more. Donate to CITR.ca. And now, back to the dance.
Mm-hmm.
We are on to our third little dance sequence, which is from Saltburn, which mixed feelings on the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a film that exists. There's definitely images on screen, I would say.
One of the films of all time, even.
Exactly.
One might say.
Many have been saying this.
Yeah.
I've heard it, you know, through the grapevine that it's like a movie or whatever, but I don't really know.
Piece of cinema. Of course, the iconic dance sequence is at the very end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you are like, not to call anyone out in the studio, but if you're like a certain studio poltergeist who hasn't seen it.
Who said that? There's like a ghost in here that's like not me.
That's kind of crazy. Wow. It's a spirit in CITR. But if you haven't seen it, it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Truly. And it is, you don't think it's going to go as far as it does. And then it does. And you're like, oh, okay, this is how we're ending it. All right.
Yeah.
I respect it for literally going balls to the wall with it.
Oh.
Oh. The only thing I know about this is that that's true.
Yeah. It certainly is true. But yeah, we were just saying that it's a fun movie.
Yeah.
You know, even if we have complaints or qualms mm-hmm. with it, it is a fun movie, and definitely this scene is one of those shocking, just like, yeah. oh my gosh, what am I watching? In yeah. a good way, I think, kind of scenes. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's Barry Keoghan, you know, being a weird little guy. Mm-hmm. She does best.
Yeah, that's his niche, and I eat it up every time. I'm a Barry Keoghan lover. Like, mm-hmm. I see him, all the movies. You tell me Barry Keoghan's being a weird little freak in a movie, I'm seated.
There's something about an actor being a weird little freak in a movie
yeah.
That just really sometimes just, like, gets you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's just something about it. There's some magical energy about, like, you know, this is what every actor wants to do deep inside
yeah.
is use their talent to be a little freak.
Embrace the freak.
Use their power for weird.
Mm-hmm,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
With great... power with great weird. I'm trying to Spider-Man? Tie this back to Spider-Man.
Oh, okay. We're thematic. Okay,
yeah.
Okay, I see what we're doing here. I see what we're cooking.
Through line.
With great freak comes great.
Even greater responsibility.
Even greater responsibility.
Yeah.
And many have been saying this. I actually think
yeah.
that one might go back to Aristotle.
Yeah.
Might go back.
Yeah, he
yes.
was, you know, Allegory of the Cave.
Ooh, freak.
Barry Keoghan could kill it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Allegory of the Cave on screen when? Like,
that's what I'm saying. And I'm just... And I don't really know what this plot would be, but
yeah.
we're going to tie it back to Saltburn.
Yeah,
yes.
And then we're going to through line all the way back to Saltburn. And then couldn't we say that Saltburn is somewhat of an allegory, of a cave allegory?
I think so. You know, there's definitely...
Write me a thesis on this right now,
yeah.
Emma.
In Emerald Fennell's Saltburn. But I feel like... Yeah, it's just such a fun movie. Like,
yeah.
it's definitely a good time. Like, this is a movie that you put on the background at a party and you're kind of like half watching it. You get like sucked in for a few seconds. You're like, okay, banger.
That's a good idea, actually. Yeah, it's very visual. I really liked it.
I am really thrown by the rip it at a party. That one's a really bold claim. You know, the only... Like, I feel like I was at a party recently. Not
yeah.
recently, like last year, where they played every single... all the Tinkerbell movies.
Oh.
Because that was it was Tinkerbell themed birthday. And
that's so cute.
They just
also.
Played all of them back to back. And that was like a nice colorful distraction. And I'm
yeah.
just trying to superimpose Saltburn over that event. And I just can't see it.
It would definitely kind of suck if you were like at all inebriated. And,
if
like,
you're high and
yeah.
you're watching
oh, yeah.
Saltburn, that's not a good time.
That's a bad time for you.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's also a problem with the movies I think I would throw on at a party. Like, mm-hmm. I am
yeah.
the kind of person who's singing Creep at karaoke,
oh
if
gosh.
Only to get us out of there faster. Because if you're
nah.
bringing me to karaoke, you're suffering. You are going to be listening
hell
to Radiohead.
Do not get the film bro to pick the party movie. Hell no.
Bro, Citizen Kane, like...
Citizen Kane at the house party?
Orson Welles
no.
went crazy with this one.
Ugh,
no, but
wow.
Eraserhead is, like, my dream movie to throw on at a house party. Like, if I ever
mm-hmm.
get given control over that... I'm bumping it, you know, Eraserhead baby on the big screen.
Bumping that.
Oh,
there's a
God.
Lot that you can compare between Brat and Eraserhead.
Yeah.
So.
I think, you know, Charlie XCX, she's Lynchian.
Mm-hmm. She's Lynchian. So Saltburn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely, if you haven't seen it, it's not something I would say, like, top of the list, go see. But this is really, like, such a fun movie, especially like the first three quarters of it. I would say I rock with it so heavy, especially
mm-hmm.
like visually
mm-hmm.
insane
mm-hmm.
soundtrack, also crazy. Then like the last quarter all falls apart, but I find like that's always the qualm I have with Emerald Fennell. But you know, I think it kind of comes through in this one again of like the oh we're really really strong and then we're fumbling at the finish line, so it kind
mm-hmm.
of like makes you like kind of icky about the whole movie.
Yeah, it kind of like leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
Now, would y'all say Saltburn, watch with friends, watch alone?
Ooh.
Watch with friends, I think.
I think watch
I saw
with
it
friends.
With a friend.
Watch with friends.
Because
then
friends.
You get that like shared reaction of like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Like,
it's not a solo watch, 1 a.m., pop it on, letterboxed it immediately afterwards, go
oh,
to sleep.
No. This is like this is one of those ones where like there'll be moments where you'll want to experience them with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or like
mm-hmm.
if you watch it on your own, then force other people to watch it so you can watch
oh, yeah.
them
were you doing
during these scenes.
The whole time you're watching the movie, you're
yeah.
like looking over at them being like,
yeah,
you guys have no idea what's about to happen.
Beautiful.
I feel like we have some other movies in our little like list of like that have iconic dance scenes, but that I think are not that solid of a movie overall. And I'm going to open this with a crazy hot take that I think
mm-hmm.
will get me killed by every
cinephile. Oh, I know where this is
campus.
Going.
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
This was the one where when I said I was doing this episode, I was talking to someone and they did immediately say, oh, like Pulp Fiction or something.
Yeah.
And this is my thing where I can't admit this to any to a film bro near me. I have to look around. I'm, you know, this is a scary. I hope this is a safe space.
It's a very safe space.
Never seen Pulp Fiction, and honestly, kind of on principle, I think I never will.
Yeah.
Just on, and I know it's a good movie. I think just on principle of what it stands for in our current contemporary culture.
Oh yeah,
I just don't think I can will myself to do it.
Yeah,
we're not forcing you.
No,
thank you. That's so beautiful that the space is opening to that.
It's also like kind of a funny bit to commit to of like not seeing like a really well acclaimed movie for like ages. I'm currently pulling that with like any of the Godfather movies.
Oh, real.
Just holding out and watching them for as long as I can. So the only Martin Scorsese movie I've ever seen is Hugo. So I think that's kind of funny.
I love that.
Yeah. Like, you know, it brings a little joy and whimsy to my life.
That rocks. But
Pulp Fiction. I think, like, I can understand cinematic importance, all that, you know, film minor. I get it. But as a whole movie, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's 3 hours long. It doesn't need to be. No. Because, you know, Uma Thurman's only in, like, 40 minutes of it, and I don't care about Bruce Willis. So I think this is like the perfect little section of it, because it's like you get, you know, Uma Thurman, you get a fun little dance scene. And it is like when you think dancing, you do think Pulp Fiction. Like, I feel like it's either that or you think like musicals, which is like that's a whole other thing.
Which I'll have like, something to say on that.
Oh, yeah.
In a minute.
We got the activation word over here.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, they're cooking in the corner.
I'm not even a big musical person. I just know. No. I just know him. I just know him like that.
No, I love musicals. Yeah. And honestly, I think musicals might be a beautiful way to segue out of Pulp Fiction world. To bring a little joy into this
That
studio.
Was quick.
I was going to say, I'll dip your toe into Pulp Fiction.
I got nothing more to say about it.
Ooh, it's cold. Ooh, it's chilly.
Don't mention feet. I mean, Quentin Tarantino
Oh, yikes. He's not here, is he?
He's actually under the table.
He would be.
Make sure your boots are triple laced in the studio.
Shoes are staying on.
I don't know. I'm not really a fan either.
Yeah.
I watched it in grade 9, like COVID lockdown, that June, whatever time. And I watched like a bunch of Quentin Tarantino movies. And that I was like, oh, okay, I did not like that. Like, I just thought, okay, I liked when everything like came together.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, sure. But while I was watching it, I was like, I hate this so much.
Yeah, like,
oh my God. Some moments too are like, I'm
crazy.
Actually like,
yeah.
What? You thought this up and you wrote this down and everyone around you was like,
yeah,
hell right. Yeah. Like,
we'll give you some money. Like, yeah, it's definitely one of those ones in retrospect, my hate for it is dimmed. But like immediately after watching it, like I was on Letterboxd being like, can I give this 2 stars and like not get kicked off the app?
Wow.
I think it's
bring down the average.
Oh, yeah.
Rating. Like, Loki? Come on.
Exactly. Like it grows on you like a fungus, unfortunately. Not in a good way.
No, it's not grown on me still.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, too, is like it was one of those movies where as soon as it was done, I was like, yeah, I never want to rewatch that.
Yeah. No, I will never be rewatching Pulp Fiction or I don't know. There's very few Tarantino movies I feel like I would.
But you're right about the dance scene. It's very iconic.
Yes.
Uma Thurman, John Travolta doing their little like sock hop.
Crazy with it.
We were talking a little bit last week about Marty McFly and like Halloween costumes. I feel like another Halloween costume is very popular is Mia Wallace.
A classic. Yeah. A classic.
Yep. Huge. Huge if you've got a bob. Like, it's just so
maybe
easy. There you go.
Next Halloween.
Next Halloween. You've got the costume.
Yeah.
And that one's for all the girlies with a bob.
Exactly.
Shout out girlies with a bob.
Literally.
Uma Thurman and Velma from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
They've got our backs.
Bob representation is alive and well.
Thank God.
Exactly.
Now.
Enough about Pulp Fiction. Yeah.
Now enough about Pulp Fiction.
Let me introduce
you to true cinema. You've all heard of High School Musical.
Of course.
We've all heard of it. We're acquainted. Now, let me tell you, they made a second one.
What?
And not a lot of people know this. Pretty underground, pretty niche. Now, I have to, when we're talking dance sequence, we have to, of course, and you mentioned musicals, right? We have to talk about the quintessential dance sequence, musical sequence of all time. And I don't think this is even a controversial take. I Don't Dance.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes.
Baseball scene, an iconic baseball scene as well. You know, throwback to when I was first on the show and we talked about Twilight and the baseball scene in Twilight.
Oh. Yeah. I'm hearing supermassive black hole somewhere throughout the nest.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I have to talk about I Don't Dance because really, like, what can be said about it that hasn't already been said in 10 million video essays on specifically that scene?
Oh, yeah.
We are all aware of the queer allegory in
of course.
I Don't Dance. I think that something about the energy of busting a move that hard on the baseball diamond, on the diamond, on the pitch. I don't play sports. Something about it just has such a particular aura that I don't think has been replicated in cinema since.
Yeah.
When they switch clothes at the end.
I was going to say. Mm-hmm. They switch clothes.
Yeah.
Oh, they got freaky.
Are you seeing what I'm seeing?
With a capital
like,
F.
They switch clothes. Guys.
Yeah. Wow. What I'm seeing is what they didn't want to show us, which is the director's cut of the adult rated.
Yeah. Drop the director's cut. High school.
Anyways,
too.
They're high schoolers, so I can.
Yeah, maybe don't
anyways,
do that.
So, but regardless, right? We can all acknowledge the deep seated queer allegory in that song and the masterpiece of choreography. Another dance from that movie that I think very fondly of is it's Troy Bolton's solo dance. Is it
I don't know if this is from the first or the second
one. Bet on it. Bet on it where he's running around the golf course.
I immediately thought of, like, you know, the Trisha Paytas, like,
his
look.
Oh my god. No, of course. But I'm like that specific dance, that solo dance prancing around the golf course at night. Sometimes I do think about that and I wonder if that's what it feels like to be truly free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
I feel like this is the time to confess that I have seen the like only interaction I've had with High School Musical 2 is through seeing the baseball dance sequence. That's all I've ever seen of the High School Musical franchise.
Through like a video essay or that makes sense.
That's like it. Like I've seen it in that context. It was like I have so much knowledge about this one specific scene, but the actual like franchise and any plots, no clue. Mm-hmm. I don't know who anyone
is. That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Honestly, to be frank, like from a literary dissection standpoint, from a media literacy standpoint.
Oh yeah.
To throw out that
because
term.
We haven't been talking from that standpoint at all today. So.
No, it's been very anecdotal, and I just want to get real with you guys for a second. From a media literacy standpoint, all you really need to understand about High School Musical is encapsulated in I Don't Dance. And really, as long as you understand the nuances and the maybe political undertones of I Don't Dance, you're really getting all you need to get from that movie.
Oh.
Do they serve in the rest of it? Yes. But do you have a nice spark notes? Absolutely. And I think the scene of Troy Bolton jumping off that cliff and grabbing the sand and throwing it in bed on it, it will live and play in my head for the rest of my life.
It's beautiful. It's like, this sounds so visceral. Like, I'm really like experiencing like true cinema secondhand here.
Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping I can like paint a vivid picture here.
Oh, yeah.
Of, you know.
It's playing in my mind.
In my mind. It's beautiful. Like the High School Musical that lives inside my brain is one of, it's a palace. Yeah.
Deeply allegorical.
Yeah.
Many have said. Absolutely. I don't know if we had any other movies. I could rattle off an extra while we're Gavin, but
we brought up I know you just saw this movie. This is fresh in your brain.
Yes, it is.
I've been watching this movie for about a year. I say that like I was there when it was released, but Stop Making Sense.
Mm-hmm.
There's some crazy moves being broken out in that because it is technically a concert film. So one would argue that the whole thing is just, you know, a dance sequence that they're busting it down the whole time. But there was one moment in particular where the busting it down gets biblical, I would say.
Biblical. We talking flood.
We're talking lamp.
Let there be
we're
light.
Talking...
Wow, let there be light levels of biblical dance?
Oh, yeah, literally.
Oh, baby. Okay.
Because
I had been meaning to watch this for like ever. Mm-hmm. And then it was showing at Filmstock. I was like, I need to go see it. And it was so good. And I was saying to you, Emma, like, like, maybe people will think this is, like, a cop-out because it is a concert film, but I think that is literally, like, one of my favorite things I've ever watched.
Yeah.
So, and for those of you who don't know what this is, it's Talking Heads concert film. So good. And, yeah, that lamp scene, literally, like, I was sitting there watching it, and I was like, oh my God, like, I'll never be able to forget this.
No, you literally feel your brain rewiring as you're watching, like, David Byrne Boogie with a Lamp.
Obviously, there's, like, you know, the big suit, like, squiggly dance, and that's so iconic, but I think, like, with the lamp, I just was like, oh my God, he like, runs and catches it and drops it, and I'm sitting here right now, and I'm looking at a lamp. Can I just say, this whole time we've been sitting here, I was like, oh, I really want to talk about this lamp, because there's one right there, and it looks just like the one in the movie. But yeah, it's so good. It just was, like, beautiful. Yeah. The way it's, like, only the light from the lamp, and, like, it's really, such a fun movie, too.
And it's, like, it's so perfectly placed in the set as well. Like, it's just this, like, little, like, downbeat kind of moment. Like, you're straight off of, like, just this crazy high-energy songs, and, like, we get this moment with This Must Be the Place where we're just kind of, like, we're sitting with it, you know? Like, it kind of feels like transiting in the morning or something like that. It's, like, it's a nice morning.
There's some intimacy to it.
Yeah.
I'm very of the opinion that, like, I feel like concert films have such, like, a specific kind of audience for them. It's obviously, it's like, you know, you think about, like, Eras Tour film or something else where it's like, it's like a specific audience of, like, people who are, like, so into that artist that they would watch a movie that's just them performing live.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I'd say first and foremost, if musicals aren't cheating, concert films aren't cheating.
Oh, thank you.
I think that's the same thing.
Yeah.
In this conversation, they're the same category.
Yeah.
And I think that, honestly, concert films, I feel like, get, like, that weird rap of, like, they're only if you really like that artist and other than that. But I think there is, like, a very real level of, like, filmmaking to a concert film.
Absolutely.
Like, you can make a dookie concert film.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta, like, know what you're cooking with.
Yeah. And I think it works so well specifically like this because even though, yeah, it's just, like, the performance. And, you know, this is credit to the band and the filmmaker, but there is, like, an actual, like, I feel like, story that you're watching, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just so well done. And I love, like, because, I mean, when you think about it, right? Like, I love live music. I think there's, like, nothing can really come close to that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like, stage design, one of my favorite, like, aspects of, like, I love seeing what a band does with their stage. And I feel like, you know, why not, like, I mean, a movie is all about that, too. Like, how are you placing things and interacting with things?
Know.
So, yeah, I agree. It's not cheating. Yeah. It's not cheating.
Especially, I think, like you said, especially when it's, like, the band is playing into that, right? Because if they're just doing because there are some bands that, like, their focus isn't about, like, playing with the stage. They're just there to jam. They're just there to jam, and they're there to hang with the crowd.
Yeah.
And that rocks, right? I love that. But I think, especially if you're looking at something like a concert film, you need a performer that is, like, playing the stage like a theater production almost.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, certain artists do that really well and certain artists don't. And I think that that's how you're going to get the distinction of, like, what will make a good concert film.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Are they using that space?
Oh, and they are using
it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
No, I cannot say enough about David Byrne in that movie. Not even just David Byrne. Like, every single member of Talking Heads is absolutely giving 110%. Like, such a fun time.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
And, you know, I think we might need to hear a little bit of This Must Be the Place.
Yeah.
Send us off. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And, you know, as per usual, we'll be here again next week, 4 to 5. Maybe, Matthew. Maybe not. Who's
maybe
to
I'll
say?
Be here. Who knows?
Actually, yeah.
Maybe some ghostly noises spooky in the background.
Yeah. But this is This Must Be the Place by Talking Heads off of the Stop Making Sense album. So if you haven't seen it, run to theaters and see it now if it's playing near you. If it is, I'm jealous.
It comes back every once in a while.
It rolls around. Yeah.